to have you with us from the Voice of America in Washington. This is VOA Global. I'm Jim Stevenson.
And I am Ira Melman. On the program today, you'll hear the latest on what has occurred at the site of student protest in Hong Kong.
Japan's prime minister dissolves parliament, and he calls for snap elections 2 years ahead of schedule. You'll hear some of the reasons why.
The man who presided over Yale University for two decades has a new and very different job. Stay with us for that.
The battle against the globalization of the Western diet is the focus of our Now segment with David Byrd.
And in sports, FIFA files a criminal complaint over the 2018 and 2022 World Cup bidding contest won by Russia and Qatar.
That and more on today's VOA Global. Again, here we are for another Daybreak Asia, a summary of Asian news and events for Wednesday, November 19th. I'm Jim Stevenson. In brief today, workers in Hong Kong began clearing barricades in a small area of the downtown occupied by pro-democracy protesters. The slow but calculated effort, backed by a court order, aims to erode the area held by demonstrators without provoking more dissent. Protesters, though, say the effort to clear the streets could take days. Shannon Van Sant reports for us from Beijing.
In Hong Kong's Central Business District's Admiralty area, 30 bailiffs backed by police cleared a small area of a protest site near local government offices. Pa Sha has been protesting in Central since the beginning of the demonstrations.
The people let the bailiffs move away all the iron barricades. So there have been a lot of iron barricades being moved away, but the occupiers and the tents are still staying. So that's what happened up to now.
The barricade removal came shortly after a court injunction against blocking traffic to Citic Tower, an office building. Protesters did not resist as workers succeeded in clearing a way to the building's parking garage. There is also a court injunction filed by a Hong Kong taxi association and bus company to clear part of Mong Kok, another protest site. Mong Kok has been the site of violent clashes for several weeks. Joseph Chung of Hong Kong's Alliance for Democracy and a professor of international relations at the University of Hong Kong says the next steps for the protest movement are under debate.
The protesters obviously also understand that protest activities of this kind cannot go on indefinitely. There is, of course, a division of views among protesters. The organizers and a majority of the protesters seem to accept that perhaps one can end the first stage of Occupy campaign and withdraw and hold to a smaller area.
Protesters began camping out in Hong Kong after police fired tear gas and pepper spray on the demonstrators on September 28th. Demonstrators want direct elections of the city's leader in 2017. Beijing proposes a plan for Hong Kong's elections that would require a panel to vet candidates for chief executive. Protesters like Pa Sha expect Hong Kong authorities to continue removing barricades in the coming days.
And we will expect more of these clearance to come maybe through the week, maybe in the morning or maybe during midnight when the occupation is at the weakest.
He and other demonstrators say their movement will continue until Beijing's plan for electoral reform goes for a vote before Hong Kong's legislature or the central government offers some form of compromise. Shannon Van Sant for VOA News, Beijing.
There are political changes in Japan, where Prime Minister Shinzo Abe is dissolving his government. He's calling for new elections to secure public support for more economic reforms to stimulate growth. We hear from VOA's Brian Patton, who says the moves come after news that Japan's economy unexpectedly fell into recession.
Mr. Abe announced that Japan's lower house of parliament will be dissolved on Friday, setting up national elections for sometime in December. His announcement also delays a planned sales tax hike that was expected to take effect next October, but will now likely be delayed for 18 months. Prime Minister Abe hopes to win a strong popular mandate in the upcoming elections to pursue his pro-growth policies known as Abenomics. He said Tuesday that if his administration is returned to power, he will not postpone the tax hike again. Mr. Abe came to power in 2012 with a plan to revitalize the world's third largest economy. The conservative leader promised to stimulate growth by increasing government spending, keeping interest rates low, and easing regulations. And to a certain extent, his policies worked. Stock prices and employment increased, but under pressure from deficit hawks, some within his own party, he also increased the sales or consumption tax rate last April to bring down Japan's public debt, which is more than twice its gross domestic product. Masazume Wakatabe, a professor of economics at Waseda University in Tokyo, attributes the sudden recession in Japan to the recent tax hike.
So after the consumption tax hike on April, the consumption figures has been very stagnating. And also other investment figure has been also not picking up, almost 70 or 80% of Japan's GDP.
Although the United States continues to experience positive growth, the weaker global outlook could be a concern if domestic consumption declines. Brian Patton, VOA News, Seoul.
Looking on the bright side of things, at least a little bit, a new public opinion survey in Afghanistan indicates signs of cautious optimism despite concerns over insecurity and corruption. The survey results were released Tuesday in the Afghan capital, Kabul, and came as another Taliban suicide attack caused fatalities in the city. From Islamabad, we hear from Ayaz Ghul.
The U.S.-based Asia Foundation released findings of its survey in Kabul, saying insecurity, corruption, and unemployment continue to be the topmost concerns for a large proportion of the Afghan public. Country Representative Abdullah Ahmad Zai says surveyors deployed across 34 Afghan provinces found a slight increase in the number of people who feel their country is moving in the wrong direction. But he says the number who feel the opposite still prevails.
This year, 54% of the respondents say that their country is moving in the right direction, which is down from 57% in 2013.
Ahmad Zai cited a rise in civilian casualties for the sharp increase in security concerns among ordinary Afghans in the past year, adding that more than 76% of respondents said they would be afraid when traveling around the country.
Civilian deaths were up since 2013, and 65% expressed increased fear for their safety overall, which is up from 59% in 2013.
However, Ahmad Zai says the survey indicates Afghans are generally hopeful the new government will take measures to steer the country out of its security and economic crisis, and will bring improvements to education, health, status of women, and other social sectors.
Roughly two-thirds of Afghans are hopeful that results of the recent election will improve their lives, and most believe that the government's reconciliation efforts with the armed opposition groups will increase stability in the country.
International forces led by the United States are preparing to end their combat mission and withdraw from Afghanistan next month. Ayaz Ghul for VOA News, Islamabad.
I'm Jim Stevenson. It was great to get together with you today. Daybreak Asia comes to you every weekday on VOA Global. It's also a podcast, which you may subscribe to for free at voanews.com.
You know, those are two words that people respond to immediately, Jim. For free. You know, you hear those two words. Oh, yeah, what do I have to do? Well, guess what? We have something for you for free.
We have something for you for free. Right. All you have to do is get in touch with us. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Weibo, and you can write to us by email, voaasia@voanews.com. And what are we giving away for free? It's our 2015 VOA calendar featuring scenes from the American Southwest. All you have to do is write to us and ask. Be sure to include your correct postal address or else we can't get it to you. And also, if you would, tell us how you heard VOA Global. We are out there on many different platforms and we'd just like to know how you heard this.
Yeah, I mean, what are we on, 24 platforms?
Something like that, yeah.
So we're just trying to nail down where you're listening to us. This is our listener reaction segment as well. Here's a story that we had on the air. Afghan officials say a suicide bomb blast has killed at least two security guards at a foreign compound in Kabul. We heard from Hikmatullah from South Waziristan in Pakistan. Such kinds of blasts are threatening as U.S. and coalition forces withdraw in most numbers. The officials and lawmakers of the international community should not repeat here the mistake of Iraq.
We also heard from Harun from Afghanistan, who said he heard it. It was the heavy blast I heard today. Guess it's a positive guess of President Ghani. One commander of the Taliban ousted the second commander of the Taliban and two different faces with one blood of the devil. Wow, quite a comment.
Yeah, and when somebody experiences something like that, obviously it makes that kind of impression on you. And we really appreciate you contacting us with that firsthand experience.
Write to us, VOA Asia at voanews.com. And by you, our weekly education feature, which talks about China online education.
Yeah, and it's I was pretty impressed with the guy that Coursera chose to lead their online presence. The man you will be hearing from momentarily for 20 years was the president of Yale University. Also coming up, you'll hear about what's happened in Hong Kong as far as the protests are concerned right here on VOA. I'm Ira Melman with VOA Education Report. As it is for many companies, China is a major business target for online education company Coursera. The man at the helm of Coursera has some pretty strong academic credentials. Rick Levin spent 20 years as president of Yale University. In March of this year, he took the helm of Coursera, immediately taking action to expand its online courses to the China mainland. I asked Levin if he had concerns about China-based companies taking market share away from Coursera by developing their own online systems.
Those new platforms are largely going to be indigenous Chinese content to serve the indigenous Chinese population, and in particular focused on serving the rural universities and the universities that are not among the very top in China by taking content from the best universities and making it available to the others. That I think the Chinese will want to own that market. I mean, we'll have a piece of it, but I think it's likely that that market is not necessarily going to be fully available to Coursera. On the other hand, we have an asset that the Chinese platforms can't replicate, which is we have the partnerships with 115 universities around the world. But we're bringing in the content from Stanford, from Yale, from Princeton, from the University of Pennsylvania, the University of London, the École Normale Supérieure, and so forth. So we have very special, really high-quality content that Chinese learners want access to, whether they're in college or whether they're simply, seeking to upgrade their job skills or seeking to enrich themselves throughout lifetime. So I think our user base, it's already large, and I think it's going to continue to grow very rapidly, even in the face of domestic platforms. I think there's plenty of room in that very large market that is China for both to go into.
What I always ask when I know that a broadcast that we're doing is going to a specific audience, and I'm talking about someone in China, no matter what age now, who is either trying to learn or already speaking English, what does Coursera have to offer me? How do I take advantage of it, and why should I be interested?
I think Coursera has something to offer virtually any category of Chinese learner. That is, Our course catalog pretty much looks like the course catalog of any great university. It covers the spectrum of human knowledge, running from the humanities and social sciences to the hard sciences to business school courses to medical school and public health courses to a really intense group of computer science and IT courses at all levels, from very basic to very advanced. These courses are really engaging, and our university partners are very very much putting their best foot forward and offering up their best teachers in ways that make it a really, really very rewarding learning experience. So I think for the Chinese, I think almost anybody, almost any interest can be satisfied at this point. And, of course, the course offerings will only get richer and more varied over time. And specifically for those people looking to upgrade their job skills, I think there is tremendous capacity there. I mean, courses like data science, which is a nine very short courses, 4 weeks each, designed to take a novice from knowing really very little about statistics to going all the way to being, to being qualified for an entry-level position as a data analyst, working with big data.
And I know this question will be asked, what's it going to cost me?
So the courses are available for free. We charge only for those who would like to have a verified certificate that they completed the course.
Former Yale President Rick Levin, now CEO of online education firm Coursera. I'm Ira Melman with Report on Education. It's available at voanews.com and as a podcast on many platforms.
I'm Sarah Williams with China Focus. Hong Kong authorities Tuesday began clearing part of the protest site that has been occupied by demonstrators since late September. Court bailiffs dismantled street barricades in Admiralty near government headquarters in the Central Business District. Student protest leader Joshua Wong said demonstrators were instructed not to fight with police. Hai Yan is a VOA Mandarin Service reporter in Hong Kong. He tells me that a court order demanded that the protesters leave the site.
It was actually extended on the Monday 1 week ago, Monday of last week. But the court has to have clear some of the wordings of the injunction. So, and also the party that applied for the injunction had to post it around the area and also have to publish the injunction in the local newspapers. So the injunction was actually issued by the court last week.
Did the protest leaders issue any instructions to demonstrators about how to handle themselves or how to handle the protests once the police came to take down the sites?
They didn't issue any statement or anything, but they just advised the occupiers to think about the responsibilities, to think about the legal responsibilities that they have to carry if they put up any resistance, and then it's up to the individual occupiers to decide. But they called on all the occupiers to act peacefully and without any violence.
How much of the protest sites have been cleared? Because I think just some of them have been cleared. Other parts are still there.
It's actually a small section. It's all just around the vehicular entrance to the civic tower and the part of the road around it. And because it is private property, so there's no dispute on part of the occupiers, because they, from the beginning, they expressed their respect for the injunction, and they all said they would not put up any resistance when the court bailiffs were on site to enact on the injunction.
Is it known whether authorities might decide to clear out other parts of the protest site?
Yeah, it is widely expected that probably tomorrow or Thursday, the earliest that the court bailiffs might move to Mong Kok, the other main occupied site against which the court has issued the injunction as well.
As the protests have gone on, what is the sort of general feeling among Hong Kongers about the continuation of these protests? Do people still want them to continue, or are people, particularly, say, business owners, getting tired of the protests?
As the Occupy movement entered its 50th day, there was a latest survey indicating that more than 67% of all citizens surveyed agreed that it's about time for the occupiers to move to leave the site. And also, it was increased about 9% comparing with a similar survey done last month. So it's really an indication that the mood of the public opinion is moving against continuing occupying of all these occupy protest sites. And also, particularly in the occupy area in Mongkok, the businesses along the roads have suffered dramatic losses in business. So it's really a lot of complaint among the local tiny businesses in Mongkok area.
VOA reporter Haiyan in Hong Kong. Follow us on Weibo. That's China Focus. I'm Sarah Williams.
From the Voice of America in Washington, it's time that we check the Asia Business News. With Jim Stevenson, I'm Ira Melman. Japanese stocks rose the most in 2 weeks Tuesday, clawing back some losses after the heavy sell-off the previous day. The Nikkei average rebounded 2.2% to 17,344, recovering some ground after a 3% loss on Monday. Among the biggest winners, media conglomerate Sony surged 6.4%, console maker Nintendo spiked 3.3%, and electronics giant Panasonic jumped just over 3%.
Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe called for a snap election for December and put off a sales tax hike planned for next year. He's seeking a renewed mandate for his all-or-nothing policies to end 2 decades of economic stagnation. That followed news that the Japanese economy had slipped into a recession last quarter after a sales tax increase in April crushed consumer and business spending, and that forced Abe to delay the second hike planned for October next year until April 2017.
Well, there'll be only a few hundred of them, and they won't come cheap. But Toyota is about to take its first small step into the unproven market for emissions-free, hydrogen-powered vehicles. The world's largest automaker announced Tuesday it'll begin selling fuel cell cars in Japan on December 15th and in the United States and Europe in mid-2015. It's going to be called the Toyota Mirai, retail points for 6.7 million yen. That's about $57,600 before taxes. Toyota says it's hoping to sell 400 of them in Japan and 300 in the rest of the world in the first year.
That's a look at Asia Business News on VOA Global. VOA Global on the Voice of America. Hi, Ira.
Hello, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Jim's had a couple of days off, and we have to get used to talking with each other again.
We're dancing again here.
Here, we found this story here. Sanitation workers have returned an heirloom diamond and sapphire ring to a San Francisco Bay Area family whose 3-year-old son had flushed it down the toilet. Why, kid, why? After several attempts, Union Sanitary District crews found the ring last week, about a month and a half after it disappeared from Munazar and Meshvish's Tapal's home in Union City. Wastewater Collection Supervisor Sean Neskis tells a local television station that the ring traveled about a third of a mile. Crews flushed the sewer lines and discovered the ring after vacuuming up debris. He equated the discovery to finding a needle in a haystack. I don't know if you really want to. I hope they cleaned it up before they put it back.
You never know. Water. I hope it was clean.
Yeah. What is coming up? Well, Steve Norman will be coming up here on VOA Global. A lot of things and not all of them good. As a matter of fact, most of them bad as far as the world is concerned. Had an attack inside of a synagogue in Jerusalem. Just more things that Steve has coming your way.
The nature of international news. But we will give you all of the headlines. And after that, we'll take a look at global business news right here on VOA Global as we take a look at what the markets have been doing or not doing and some of the trends that the companies are setting, all coming your way on today's program. But first, we've got the latest world news. It's International Edition with Steve Norman.
And now VOA's International Edition. Coming up, deadly attack at a Jerusalem synagogue, President Obama on fighting the Ebola outbreak, plus the latest on the situation in eastern Ukraine. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. Israeli police say a number of Israelis have been killed, several wounded in an attack by two Palestinians happened at a synagogue in Jerusalem. Two attackers were killed by police. VOA's Scott Bob is in Jerusalem with our report.
The attack occurred during morning prayers at a synagogue in an ultra-Orthodox Jewish neighborhood in West Jerusalem. Israeli police spokesman Mickey Rosenfeld said the synagogue was full of people praying.
Two terrorists attacked using knives, an axe, and also a pistol, opening fire at everyone that was inside the synagogue. Our police officers that arrived at the scene engaged contact with those terrorists and shot and killed the terrorists within moments.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, in a statement, promised to respond harshly and blamed the attack on what he called incitement by the militant Palestinian group Hamas and the head of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas. Mr. Abbas condemned the attack and said he condemns the killing of civilians no matter who is doing it. The militant group Hamas praised the attack, calling it a response to the continued Israeli crimes and the desecration of Jerusalem's Al-Aqsa Mosque. The mosque sits on the noble sanctuary or Temple Mount that is holy to Muslims and Jews. Violence between Israelis and Palestinians has surged in recent weeks, fueled by rising tension over the site. Non-Muslims may visit the site, but may not pray there, according to an agreement dating to the 1967 Israeli-Arab War. Some nationalist Israelis have been going to the site to pray, causing demonstrations and riots in East Jerusalem. Scott Bob, VOA News, Jerusalem.
Two new videos by jihadist groups show the conflicting roles of Europeans in some brutal struggles waged by militant Islamists as both victims and as perpetrators. One shows French and Dutch hostages pleading for help. Another appears to show a Frenchman and possibly another involved in an execution of Syrian soldiers as possible members of the Islamic State militants. Lisa Bryant has details.
French authorities confirmed that a new video showing Frenchman Serge Lazarevich asking France to help liberate him was authentic. The video was posted by Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, which captured Lazarevich and another hostage 3 years ago in Mali. The other hostage, Philippe Verdun, was shot dead in 2012. The video also shows a Dutch hostage. Lazarevich is the last Frenchman being held hostage. Another hostage, Hervé Gourdel, was executed in September. A second video released Sunday shows another face of militant Islam, with Europe not only a target but an exporter of radical fighters. Authorities say 22-year-old French convert Maxime Ochard appears to be among Islamic State militants who are filmed executing Syrian soldiers. Another Frenchman may also be in the video. Authorities estimate that thousands of Europeans have left their homelands to join the IS in Iraq and Syria, including nearly 1,000 French. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Addressing a meeting of supporters of Moscow on Tuesday, President Vladimir Putin accused the United States of seeking to, in his words, subdue Russia. Came just days after receiving a frosty reception at the G20 meeting in Australia and following fresh accusations that Moscow is putting increasing military pressure on Ukraine. Earlier Tuesday, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg told reporters he has information of a Russian military buildup inside Ukraine.
It is a military buildup, and the picture we have confirms the picture which is also provided by other sources, by open sources, by independent reporters, by the OSCE. They are also providing information about the military buildup, both inside Ukraine, but we also see a military buildup on the Russian side of the border. And we speak about troops, we speak about equipment, and we speak also about artillery and very modern air defense system. So this is a serious military buildup, and we call on Russia to pull back its troops and contribute to a peaceful agreement.
Also Tuesday, Ukrainian Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk called on Russia to hold serious negotiations on a neutral territory. Moscow has repeatedly denied directly supporting the rebellion in eastern Ukraine and has described Russian troops seen fighting alongside pro-Russian separatists there as volunteers. At the White House on Tuesday, President Obama spoke with a number of his advisors about the Ebola crisis, including the U.S. Ebola Response Coordinator, Ron Klain. As the meeting was beginning, Mr. Obama spoke with reporters about the outbreak.
As long as the outbreak continues to rage in the three countries in West Africa, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea, this is still going to be a danger, not just for America, but for the entire world. We are nowhere near out of the woods yet in West Africa. The good news is in parts of Liberia, our efforts, both civilian and military, are really paying dividends. And we are seeing the curve bending so that we are on track with diligence dealing with the hot spots that may still reemerge to actually get a handle on that disease. We're still seeing an increase of cases in Sierra Leone, although our British counterparts are doing an excellent job working with us and the international community to coordinate the situation there. In Guinea, the numbers are lower than in Sierra Leone or Liberia, but they're often in very remote areas that are hard to reach, and some of the international coordination still needs to improve.
President Obama urged U.S. lawmakers to approve before leaving for a holiday recess in mid-December the $6.2 billion that he's requested to fight the virus, blamed for thousands of deaths, including two people who died in the United States after becoming infected in West Africa. The current outbreak of Ebola is the worst on record. It has left, according to the World Health Organization, 5,177 people dead, most of them in Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Guinea. Speaker of the Parliament in Myanmar, also known as Burma, says the military-drafted constitution that bars opposition leader Aung San Suu Kyi from becoming president cannot be changed before elections next November. Shui Man said voters will be able to take part in a nationwide referendum on constitutional changes in May. He did say it will be impossible, though, for any changes to go into effect immediately. Aung San Suu Kyi is prohibited from becoming a president by a constitutional clause that bars anyone with a spouse or children who are citizens of a foreign nation or sons are British nationals. Those are some of the stories making news. You can find a lot more at our website, voanews.com. And if you find yourself on the Internet, you can follow me on Twitter at VOA Norman. Have a good day.
This is Business News on VOA Global with Ira Melman. I'm Jim Stevenson. U.S. stocks broke a five-day run of fractional moves and staged a micro-rally to close at record levels. The numbers were boosted by stronger housing data and the U.S., as well as widely anticipated news of a snap election in Japan. The S&P 500 gained 10.50 points to close at 2,051, and this marks the 43rd time the index closed at a record high this year. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 40.20 points to 17,687. That hit an all-time high for the 26th time in 2014.
The inflation picked up in October in the United States due to higher prices that U.S. companies receive for new model cars, beef, pork, pharmaceuticals, and electric power. The producer price index rose 0.2% in October from the previous month, according to the U.S. Labor Department. The index measures the cost of goods and services before they reach the consumer. The prices for many products climbed even as wholesale gas costs plummeted 5.8% last month. Automakers contributed to inflation by introducing 2015 car models. Beef prices jumped 6% and pork prices surged 8.1%.
Facebook is launching a new free app for its popular groups feature that gives users a chance to create and interact on the website with communities based on shared interests, such as hobbies, geography, or culture. Facebook has been trying to expand its presence on people's mobile devices by creating and charging for apps such as Messenger, Paper, Instagram, and WhatsApp. But it won't require people to use the standalone app or use Facebook groups. They'll still be able to access groups through the Facebook app or on the website.
And there you have it, a look at business news here on The Voice of America.
This is VOA Global on The Voice of America. Coming up, Ira, we've got your version of American Cafe. It's your program. You know, there's a saying, if you lived through the 1960s, then you probably didn't remember it. If you didn't live through the 1960s, you definitely don't.
Yeah, and then David Byrd is going to be around with a fascinating story about what the American diet is doing to the rest of the world and some attempts to do away with it.
Let's hear it.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. The 1960s was an era of change and turmoil for the United States as well as other parts of the world. These changes ranged from social attitudes to politics, even science. You can now hear this period of history come alive on YouTube through the voices of prominent figures who spoke at the University of California, Los Angeles, also known as UCLA. Their recorded speeches were buried and forgotten for years until recently. Elizabeth Lee has the story from Los Angeles.
It is we, the people of this country.
From entertainers.
We, American people, face more problems and more.
To astronauts.
We'd like to take the time today to tell you a little bit about Apollo 14 and what.
To world leaders.
Haile Selassie, first emperor of Ethiopia.
Hundreds of people who shaped the 1960s and early 1970s gave speeches at the University of California, Los Angeles that were recorded. Chair of the Communications Department, Tim Groling, says the speeches present an audio snapshot of a significant time in history.
It's the combination of this being, I think, dramatic figures speaking at what was really a dramatic time. I mean, this is a time period where society is really changing.
Hundreds of speeches reflecting social and political changes and new discoveries in scientific knowledge were recorded, locked in file cabinets, and forgotten until recently when Groling made a discovery.
I was at a thrift store and saw an old reel-to-reel unit for $20 that I'm like, I bet you that fits with the tapes. And $20, might as well give it a shot.
Once he had the old audio tape player, Groling solicited the help of former student Derek Bolin to digitize the speeches made between 1962 and 1973.
I felt very good about doing this because I felt like I was preserving a piece of history.
I want to make it very clear that I come in total support.
In this 1972 speech, actress Jane Fonda spoke at an anti-Vietnam War rally on campus, reflecting the sentiment of the time.
I don't feel that Nixon and the people that work with him represent the interests of any of us, be we men, women, black, white, yellow, Chicano, or brown.
Every country.
Yitzhak Rabin spoke at the university while he was Israeli ambassador to the United States.
I'm not very optimistic about the prospects of achieving peace in the near future for two main reasons. I don't believe that Egypt or the ruler of Egypt wants peace. And he has got his own reasons that derives from his ambitions to take over the Middle East. And Israel serves as a barrier between him, between Egypt and the other Arab countries. But more than that, he has found a great support in one of the superpowers, in the Soviet Union.
The speeches went beyond world politics. Jonas Salk, who developed the polio vaccine, gave a speech in 1972 about that period in time as significant in the history of science.
The world is going through very interesting changes now and changes of such nature that I believe that this is perhaps the most interesting time that man has ever lived and perhaps is more interesting than will ever be true again in the future.
Tim Groling says without technology and the internet, it would be difficult for the public to hear these historical figures. 366 of the speeches given at UCLA are now available on YouTube. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
Elizabeth Lee is one of the many VOA correspondents and reporters who regularly visit the American Cafe. American Cafe can be heard every day of the week on voanews.com, as well as individual podcasts on numerous platforms. Join us. I'm Ira Melman, VOA News in the American Cafe.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. The globalization of the Western diet, one high in fat, salt, sugar, and calories, is bad for your health and for the environment. VOA's Roseanne Skirbel found out that a new study in the journal Nature says there are some dietary solutions to this problem, but they will require a change in your thinking.
In the study, David Tillman analyzed data from 100 countries to chart what people ate and how diet affected health. The University of Minnesota ecology professor noted a trend beginning in the 1960s as nations industrialized, populations increased, and incomes rose. More people began to adopt the so-called Western diet, one high in refined sugar, fat, oil, and meat. People began to get fatter and sicker.
The excess, let's say, in the 15 richest nations in the world right now is on the order of about 400 or 500 extra calories a day that are eaten beyond what people need, and that leads to people to gain weight.
And overweight people are at greater risk for non-communicable diseases like diabetes, heart disease, and some cancers.
Diabetes is shooting at a very high rate in the United States and across Europe. Heart disease is a major cause of mortality in the Western countries. And unfortunately, when people become industrialized, if they adopt this Western diet, they're going to have these same health impacts. And in some cases, if you're Asian, actually have them more severely than even happens in the West.
China, he says, is a case in point where diabetes has skyrocketed.
From less than 1% to 10% of the population having diabetes as they began to industrialize over a 20-year period. And that hasn't leveled off yet. That's still going up. So, and that is happening all across the world, in Mexico and Nigeria and so on, just nation after nation.
And the diet bad for humans is also bad for the environment. As global population grows, experts say more forests and tropical habitats will be converted into farmland for crops or grazing pasture for cattle to meet the increased demand for food.
We're likely to have more greenhouse gas released in the future from agriculture because of this dietary shift than all the greenhouse gas that right now comes out of all of the cars and all the airplanes, boats, and ships, all forms of transportation. So our change in diet is likely to be worse for the world for climate warming than all the transportation sources we use right now.
Writing in the journal Nature, Tillman says the link between diet, the environment, and human health, what he calls a trilemma, is one of the greatest challenges facing humanity. One solution he presents is leaving the Western diet behind, something that Jacqueline Rogers and Mike Richmond know something about. The two VOA staffers have each lost 22 kilograms and kept off the weight. Rogers, who has a family history of diabetes, calls herself a reformed carboholic.
I ate lots of carbs all the time. That was my go-to. Pastas, rices, potatoes, breads. I never met any of those things in any form that I didn't like. I had to switch that around, become more vegetable-based, more fruit-based, more protein-based. That plus physical activity made the big difference for me.
Richmond says he was always athletic, but could not compete like he used to because he was overweight. He started to go to a gym, lift weights, and run on a treadmill. At the same time, he changed his diet.
It hasn't been anything as complicated as what Jackie's done. I mean, I've just cut out a lot of sweets, a lot of junk, and also just simple things like walking up the stairs and instead of taking the elevator. I always do that. I will not take the elevator at all.
My job is sedentary. I have to force myself to get up, go out, walk around the building, walk up the stairs, go to the fifth floor, come on back down. I have to make myself do something throughout the day, not just sit at the computer.
Rogers says the switch in lifestyle has been a matter of making better choices, choices that are better for her health and the health of the planet. And she adds she no longer has any sign of diabetes. Roseanne Skirbel, VOA News, Washington.
So what do you think? Do you eat a Western diet? Has it affected your health? Let us know by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia. Until next time, I'm David Byrd.
All right, I admit it. I'm guilty. I eat a Western diet. You know, I'm here in the West. I eat a Western diet. If I want a hamburger, I get a hamburger.
Right.
If I want a hot dog, I want fried chicken, stuff right. like that. And look what's happened. I'm in terrible shape. It's as simple as that.
Nobody can tell because they're listening to you.
Yeah, but, I mean, you can relay that information. But okay. Nevertheless, I mean, we have enough different stuff to eat here, so it's okay.
It's time for sports on VOA Global. Jim Stevenson along with Ira Melman. FIFA filed a criminal complaint against unnamed individuals Tuesday over the 2018 and 2022 World Cup bidding contests, which were won by Russia and Qatar. FIFA said its president, Sepp Blatter, asked Switzerland's attorney general to investigate the behavior of the unnamed people involved in the bid campaigns. In an apparent move to avert criticism of FIFA, Blatter acted on a request by FIFA's ethics judge, whose summary last week of an investigation by American prosecutor Michael Garcia was widely denounced as a whitewash of Russia, Qatar, and FIFA officials.
Former England coach Sven-Goran Eriksson, there's a British name for you, is taking over at the Chinese club Shanghai East Asia. The 66-year-old Swede said Tuesday he wants to make the club a force not only in China but throughout Asia and appears willing to spend big to attract fresh talent. By big, they mean big. The club reportedly has about $82 million to spend on players.
Doha has been chosen to host the 2019 Athletics World Championships. The Qatar capital beat out bids from Eugene, Oregon, and Barcelona in a secret vote Tuesday by members of the IAAF Council. Doha succeeded after missing out in a bid to host the 2017 World Championships. The bid teams from all three cities made final presentations to IAAF officials ahead of the vote.
Well, Matt Shoemaker combined with four relievers on a four-hitter to upstage Sohei Ohtani and the Major League Baseball All-Stars from the United States beat Japan 3-1 Tuesday in the finale of their five-game series. Shoemaker, who finished second to Chicago White Sox first baseman Jose Abreu in the American League Rookie of the Year voting, got the win by allowing two hits in five scoreless innings. The American All-Stars won the last two games after an 0-3 start.
Guess who's coming back? Rafael Nadal. Nadal says he will return to playing at the start of the year. The 14-time Grand Slam tennis champion has not played since having his appendix removed this month. I guess he's a little bit lighter now. That forced him to miss the season-ending ATP Finals. Nadal says he will play in Abu Dhabi in January. After that, he'll play his first official tournament in Doha. That's a look at sports on VOA Global. Well, what's happening in the music scene, Ira?
Well, Bette Midler earns her highest entry ever on the Billboard 200 chart this week with It's the Girls. It's her first new studio album in 8 years, debuts at number 3. Midler's tribute to girl groups features her versions of songs by TLC, The Supremes, and the Andrews Sisters, and the Shirelles, among others. If you like old music, you're going to like this.
That's great. Well, on November 12th, the top 12 finalists on the popular reality show The Voice were chosen. Each of the show's four coaches has three contestants to mentor through the live television rounds. Team Blake features Reagan James, Craig Wayne Bodd, and Jesse Pitts. They got a bunch of other people on there as well.
Well, husband and wife country superstars Tim McGraw and Faith Hill are working on new film projects for 2015 release. Hill will star in the crime drama Dixieland alongside Chris Zilka and Elvis Presley's granddaughter, Riley Keough. Hill made her film debut in 2004 as The Stepford Wives. McGraw, who previously starred in Friday Night Lights, The Blind Side, and Four Christmases, will appear in Tomorrowland. The science fiction film also stars George Clooney and is scheduled for release in May of 2015.
Well, here's Tim McGraw and Faith Hill's duet. Meanwhile, back at Mama's.
running round in this new truck. Bank lets me borrow from month to month. Running out of credit and find a little cash on the radio. Standing still, they're blowing past. Numbers on cars going NASCAR fast. What I wouldn't give for a slow down, don't you know? 'Cause where I come from, only the horses run. When the day is done, we take it easy. Meanwhile, back at Mama's, the porch light's on. Come on in if you wanna. Supper's on the stove and beer's in the fridge. Red sun sinking out low on the ridge. Game's on the tube and Daddy smokes cigarettes. Whiskey keeps his whistle wet. Funny the things you thought you'd never miss in a world gone crazy as this. Talk about how hard it is to breathe here. Even with the windows down, can't catch a southern breeze here. One of these days, gonna pack it up and leave here. 'Cause meanwhile, back at Mama's, the porch light's on. Come on in if you wanna. Supper's on the stove and beer's in the fridge. Red sun sinking out low on the ridge. Game's on the tube and Daddy smokes cigarettes. Whiskey keeps his whistle wet. Funny the things you thought you'd never miss in a world gone crazy as this. Somebody, everybody knows there. Everybody knows everybody. I miss those small town rooms, walking around in muddy boots. The sound of rain on an old tin roof. It's time we head on back. 'Cause meanwhile, back at Mama's, the for sale sign's gone up and I'm gonna dump this truck and the little I got on a loan to own and a 3-acre lot. Put supper on the stove and beer in the fridge. We're going for broke, yeah, we're gonna be rich. Watch the sun setting on the ridge. Baby, tell me what you think about this. Me and you back at Mama. Yeah, me and you back at Mama's.
This is VOA Global from the Voice of America. I hate to tell you this, but there's some bad news we have to tell you about.
What's that?
Chocolate. There might be a shortage of chocolate.
What?
On the way. Yeah.
How's that possible?
Well, the Mars company, people make all those candy bars, also some others around the world, they recently warned that consumer demand for chocolate will exceed cocoa supply by 2020. That's only, what, 6 years away from now?
Wow.
Creating a gap in supply and demand of 1 million metric tons, that according to Bloomberg, and they say the predicted shortage is attributed to myriad factors such as disease, drought, rapacious new markets, that's what they said, and the displacement of cacao,
yeah, right,
whatever it is, by more productive crops such as corn and rubber, according to Bloomberg. However, Jim, the International Cocoa Organization disagrees.
They should. They're a global group made up of cocoa-producing and consuming countries. And they told USA Today Network that the prediction is not correct. Not correct.
Spin. It's nothing but a spin. It's another corporate spokesman.
It melts in your hands.
Yeah, we call them corporate flex, and they will take some position, and they'll try to back it up with whatever thing they have. This time, I hope they're right.
I hope there
well,
will not,
not
be a shortage
of chocolate. Well, if not, you know, just eat all the chocolate you can get now.
Give me that candy bar, will you? All please right, eat it before it's gone. Fine. That's going to wrap things up for us today on VOA Global with Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. Our thanks today to Tracy Carter, who is our director. Jackson Witt is our technical director, and Diane Gao runs the whole shebang. It's all her fault.
Right to her.
Good night, everybody, or good day, wherever you might be.